All right, welcome back to Talking Baseball. Our next guest this morning on a cloudy Sunday is a national writer for Major League Baseball. He also is a senior writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, a biographer for the book number 24, all about Willie Mays, and that's a New York Times bestseller, and also an autobiography of Ricky Henderson called Off Base. Let's welcome in John Shea. Good morning, John.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing good, buddy. Yourself?
No, great, man. Come on. Fans are in the stands. It's baseball season, right?
Well, Baseball Digest came out with a Lifetime Achievement Award, and the recipient was Willie Mays. And it talked about the significant contribution to the national game. And, of course, Willie Mays turning 90 years old on May 6th. I'd like to hear your impression of what Willie Mays felt when they called him and said, hey, you're our first recipient of the Baseball Digest Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah, actually, I think I was the one who told him that.
That's great.
Yeah, Rick Cerrone is the longtime editor at Baseball Digest, and he used to be the main PR guy with the Yankees, so I've known him for quite some time. And he just kind of asked me, he says, hey, how can I get this done? Where can I send it? This kind of thing. So, yeah, it's an award that is beyond, they give it to a living person. It's the inaugural award. They want to do it every year, and there really isn't one. The Hall of Fame has one, but it's every 3 years, Lifetime Achievement Award. So it's not just what he did on the field. It's what he's done off the field in helping people, helping kids, et cetera, through his foundation, through otherwise, and just being Willie Mays. But it was a pretty distinguished list of finalists for, you know, Rachel Robinson, Vince Scully, Sandy Koufax, and a couple others, but it was Mays who was chosen the first. And the cover of the magazine is pretty cool. You know, Baseball Digest was around when Willie played. So he was on the cover in the 50s, he was on the cover in the 60s and the 70s, and now he's on the cover again. And I think they come out every couple of months. They used to come out every month. Remember, it was real small when you're a kid.
It was. Up about, I don't know. I remember it. It was really a good book, too.
Yeah. But now it's like Sports Illustrated. You know, it's 8.5 by 11 or whatever that size is.
Well, Buster Posey ended up getting 1,000 games on Friday, and you've covered him over his 10, 12-year career. Some of the things that I've seen from Buster, his calling of a game has gotten so much better. Blocking of the ball has gotten better. His arm strength, his perfection, his throwing to second base is just to the best, you know. And here he is in his 30s. What have you seen, besides what I just threw out there, what have you seen him as a catcher? How has he grown on you?
Well, I think we're spoiled because so many teams go through catchers every other year. They got a new one, and it's the next and the best and the brightest. But through all the injuries, through all the batting woes, through all the lack of production offensively, especially in the second halves, the defense has been constant. And you talk about the arm, the framing, the working with pitchers. You never hear anybody complaining about, you know, how they, you know, align before games, during games, between innings, and the communication. And, you know, you hear a couple of pitchers say, well, you know, one of the reasons I kind of wanted to come to San Francisco was to throw to Posey. And I guess that's the ultimate compliment. And all that talk about, well, put him at first base, that's kind of ridiculous because he doesn't provide the offense, or he has it, maybe this year he is, that a first baseman needs to give you. So his value, his ultimate value is behind the plate. So if that means taking a day off or maybe even two a week to rest him, to play five games a week, maybe six, then you do it. You don't stick him at first and call it an off day. that's just not happening. And plus, they have 9 first basemen anyway now. So, yeah, I mean, you know, hey, let me ask you something. Speaking of Posey, there was in the ninth inning last night, you know, you have Santos on the mound, who was beautiful in his first outing. But then, so he gets thrown, you know, he was a high leverage in his first outing, and he was masterful with 2 strikes. But this time, he doesn't have the command. He falls behind 2-0 to the first batter, who was at Sierra. And then it gets to 3-2. And I'm telling myself, Posey, you better call a fastball here because the kid doesn't have command of the slider quite yet. But he called a slider, and it was low, and it was an easy take. And it was ball 4, next guy hits a home run, game's over. What is that okay with you? I mean, what, no. Did you see that, or did should that
no,
have been
I saw
practical?
The same thing.
It was an easy 97-98.
And to tell you the truth, John, he went 3-0 on the hitter, and all three pitches were breaking balls. He didn't throw a fastball until he went 3-0. And then he pumped fastball, mm-hmm. fastball, fastball, and then he finally walked him on the breaking ball away. I was a little confused why he came right out and throwing breaking balls, because this kid's so electric in 96 and 98 and falls behind him to the first hitter. And I thought that just put everything just magnified, because then he's facing Jesus Aguilar, who's a really power hitter. And sure enough, he goes 0-1 fastball and throws another fastball, and Aguilar didn't miss it. He hit the hell out of that ball. I was just a little confused about the breaking ball starting off that hitter. I thought maybe, hey, come out, pump him in there. It's 1-1. Now he falls behind. And you and I both know this. When a young kid's out there and you walk the first hitter, the knees start shaking. And he was yeah. tested early as a 21-year-old yesterday, and I just didn't like the move at all. I thought a veteran should have been in there in the ninth inning.
And you know what? The manager was asked about that. It was the very last question last night to him, and it's like, hey, you had Rogers and McGee, your eighth and ninth guys, your mm-hmm. high-leverage guys all year. Obviously, McGee's the closer, and Rogers is a setup guy. And maybe these two hard throwers are going to emerge as setup guys if they get battle-tested and succeed. But they didn't want to go there because they had pitched the last two games. So, well, why did they pitch the last two games? Because the Giants had that 4-0, 4-run lead was a Friday, and Kapler brought them both in. So Kapler was asked, well, why'd you use those guys anyway? Why didn't you save them for a close game like tonight? And he said, well, that's a fair question. In other words, he didn't mind being second-guessed on that one. But you're right. Maybe they should have not used them in a 4-run lead the night before and gone with the yeah. next level of relievers. But Kapler's point was, I got to trust everybody in the bullpen. I can't not trust this guy in a high-leverage situation. You got to put him out there, and you got to trust your guys. And obviously, Santos, I mean, Santos got to trust his stuff. He's got to trust 98. And if you hit me, you tip your cap, but move on. But you can't walk a guy to lead off.
No, and the inexperience showed right off of that. And even if you would have started Peralta in the front of that inning and brought Santos in after, I would have thought better. But you know what? It's second-guessing the manager, and we all do that. I just didn't understand why he brought a 21-year-old kid in there. You also had Duvall down there. You had some reliable arms to get through that ninth inning, but he took a chance, and it didn't work. So I just weighed on Santos last night going home thinking about what he did as a 21-year-old and looking at the ceiling and counting dots and everything else. But, you know, a new day is coming out, so we need to see what Logan Webb does. But you wrote a nice column today. It's in the San Francisco Chronicle, as well as you can pick it up on Twitter at John Shea Hay. And it talks about K to hit ratio. Can you expand on that a little bit for us?
Well, we never used to talk about this when hits just dominated the game and strikeouts weren't so prevalent. I mean, as far back as 2000, there were 13,000 more hits than strikeouts, 13,000 in baseball. And every year, the gap started to narrow. You know, in 2010, it was down to 8,000. 2015, it was down to 4,500. And, you know, the strikeouts increased. The hits pretty much were the same every year. And then 2018 was the first year in history strikeouts outnumbered hits by only 189. And then the next year, 2019, another full season, went up a little, 784 more strikeouts than hits, okay? Then last year, despite only 60 games, there were 1,100 more strikeouts than hits. This year, they're already at 75% of that number from last year. It's over 900 more strikeouts than hits. So this trend just means a whole bunch more strikeouts and less action. And, you know, you look at Jacob DeGrom, who's got 50 strikeouts in his first four games. Nobody's ever done that. Yeah. And the kid from Milwaukee, Corbin Burnes, 40 strikeouts and no walks, allowed in his first few games. But it's just taken over the game. And, you know, obviously they're talking about moving back the mound in the Atlantic League. They're talking to Bob Melvin. He said, that's a silly idea. You're going to get guys hurt. So, well, guys get hurt 60 feet, 6 inches. What about six? Well, it's you're just extending yourself a little bit more. I'd love to hear from you about that, because the breaking stuff is going to be different. The fastball is not going to have the same velocity, and plus, are you going to overextend your arm and get hurt?
I believe so too, especially the breaking ball. You have to change the whole breaking ball process of where you're going to, you know, break that breaking ball off. You're pushing it a little farther, and I just don't think you need to move the mound back. Tell the hitters to stand deep in a box all the time. Move the box back a little bit more if you wanted to. But one of the questions I wanted to throw to you about that strikeout to hit ratio is when you're looking at these hitters, their first thought pattern is, I want to swing as hard as I can. I'm looking for a zone. You see these hitters, they don't care if they strike out. They're looking for a certain pitch at a certain time. That has changed from when I played and when you covered us. I mean, it was a total different thought pattern. I'd like to hear what you think of these hitters going up there going, I don't care if I strike out. I'm going to try to hit a ball out of the yard.
Well, I think it's a damn shame there's no two-strike approach. I mean, when you struck out a guy, the guy felt shame. He walked back, and he was frowned upon in the dugout, and he said, that's the last thing I ever want to do is strike out. But now there's no two-strike approach. I mean, I grew up in this game covering Tony Gwynn every day down in San Diego, and mm-hmm. he struck out 15 times, a year, if that. Sometimes fewer, but I mean, he would always make contact, and you're not going to reach base if you strike out, but you might reach base if you hit a ground ball. So, because all kinds of factors could happen, but there's no shame striking out anymore. And I that's unfortunate, because you see these guys go up to the plate with two strikes and swing for the fences. And it doesn't matter if they miss, well, I'll get them next time, because they just figure an out is an out. Well, an out isn't an out. If you put the ball in play, you have some kind of chance of getting on base, even if you pop it up or hit a slow roller, you could beat it out. But anyway, that's the way the game has changed in a way that is unfortunate, because fans are seeing a lot less action and rallies might not be what they could. Yeah, you might tag one, on 0-2 that, instead of choking up and going the other way and bouncing out, you might hit a 500-foot home run. But, how rare is that? We don't know. But it's just a different approach, a different mentality. And, I think the Giants over the years have, especially under Bochy and even under Kapler, contact is important. Maybe for some other teams, it's not. I remember those Texas teams over the years. Everybody had 200 strikeouts up and down the lineup. And 100 strikeouts on the Giants has been pretty rare. So that's kind of good to see. I mean, Tony Gwynn is a guy I covered. He was like DiMaggio. He just didn't strike out. And I think it's a cool approach, but you don't see it so much anymore.
Well, great stuff as usual. John, it's always good talking to you about baseball. And please read his article. It's a great article about K-to-hit ratio and some of the things that we're looking at this year as well as the past years and how baseball has changed. John, we're looking forward to hooking up with you once and for all once we get out to the ballpark and getting to see you and talking some more baseball with you. And appreciate your time on Talking Baseball this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Bill.
All right, that was John Shea, and we'll be right back with Marty Lurie, Kerry Crowley, and myself on Talkin' Baseball, 104.5, 680 KNBR, the sports leader.